Welcome to the Pirates Overboard podcast. I'm your host, Justin Ostwick, joined alongside Jonathan Luters. We are two student athletes excited to sit down with fellow Pirates to talk about their experience here at the Hall and learn more about them on a personal level. Go check out and follow the Pirates Overboard Instagram page for all of our content. And if you want to go watch our podcasts, go to our YouTube page at Pirates Overboard. So let's get into it.
Wow, here we are. Quinn Murtha. Quinn Murtha, a junior diver for your men's swim and dive team here at SHU. Hailing all the way from Cumming, Georgia, he has made a huge impact both in and out of the pool as time here at the Hall. We will discuss Quinn's early life growing up, how he got into diving, his time in and out of the pool while at Seton Hall, his love for music and his faith, his academics, his contribution to Seton Hall's Student Athlete Advisory Committee, and of course, all and any advice he has to give to fellow Seton Hall Pirates. Quinn does it all here at SHU, and we are excited to dive in, no pun intended, and get going with this episode. So without further ado, your SAC DE&I Chair Board Member, 2023 Big East Champion in the 1 meter dive and the 3 meter dive, your Seton Hall Male Sophomore Athlete of the Year, Junior Captain, and our phenomenal video man behind the scenes, we have in studio with us today, instead of behind the glass, Quinn Murtha.
Yeah, I'm excited for this one, and I wanted to put it out there first. We're recording today on November 10th, the day before Veterans Day, so to all the veterans out there, we want to kind of shout them out here. Thank you for all your service and what you've done for our country. This is, you guys are one of the reasons why we have the opportunity to do something like this, record a podcast, 100%. Go to school, get careers outside of this. So thank you to all of our veterans out there. That's kind of where I want to start off. So your father was a veteran. Do you want to talk anything about that as we get rolling here?
Yeah. My dad was in the Marine Corps in the Army. He spent a lot of time doing that straight out of high school. He went to boot camp and then he served overseas in a bunch of different places. And I think part of that and his experience in doing that instilled in me a lot of appreciation for our vets. So like you guys said, thank you to all of y'all.
Yeah. How long did you serve for?
Like a decade and a half.
Wow.
Yeah, wow. Wow.
Awesome.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah. Thank you for his service. And yeah,
yes, thank you Mr. Murtha, who he's one of our biggest cheerleaders here at with the Seton Hall Swim and Dive here. He has been at every single meet since Quinn has been here. You have a notebook out today. You're taking notes. Usually that's us doing the note-taking here today. You have any explanations on why you're taking some notes on this?
Just in case anything interesting happens that I want to remember for later.
Very prepared.
Very prepared. That's what we like to see for future guests. This guy's got it. Watch out. He's on top of it. So how are you today? It's Friday. We're in the middle of November. It's kind of starting to get cold now, which I enjoy, but Mr. Georgia Man over here may not. He likes that sunshine. But how are you today on this Friday?
I'm good on this Friday. I'm glad it wasn't raining because I don't know, but waking up this morning, I kind of had that rain feel like it might happen, and it didn't. So that's good. And it also wasn't too cold. It was like 51 degrees outside today. So I kind of get away with shorts and a sweatshirt for the most of it. But now that it's nighttime, it's a little more chilly.
A little more chilly indeed. And you've had a great start to your season so far. We've come off a really great stretch for the men's swim and dive team. Went undefeated in the fall so far, dual meet wise. Beat Ryder. We had an unscored meet against Bucknell. Then we had a back to back last week against Drexel and Lehigh. Beat Drexel, really competitive meet at Drexel, a tough place to swim.
Sure.
A really good grind out win. And then with Lehigh, we were back here at home, where a hidden opponent meet. You've had phenomenal dives, so kind of talk to us about what you've seen so far at the start of the season.
Yeah, this season, while we have a bit of a smaller team this year, there's only 24 of us compared to the 30 last year. I feel like we've really showed out, and we've had great swims and dives. Like you said, Drexel, very competitive. They're really good swimmers over there, really good divers too, but we were able to come out of there with a W. And last year we beat them, but they were a little injured, and they had guys missing, and this year they kind of had a full squad, so... Mm-hmm. To be able to get a dub against them, really, really promising, especially this early in the season.
Yeah, and I know I had swam with a couple of club teammates were on Drexel in years prior to, and Ben Endersby, who we had on, who was also a part of that club team, we were kind of joking on the bus, like, hey, Ben, if we beat Drexel today. I would have swept Drexel in my Seton Hall career, and we got the win. My one of my good friends and mentors, Jason Arthur, he was in the stands, and he was kind of giving me pointers while I was down there. Now, I didn't want to say it to him in person, but I'm glad I said it here. I don't know if he's going to listen to it or not, but Jason Arthur, if you're listening, ha, I got you. I swept you. So it was a great feeling. They're a really competitive team. We'll see them in a couple of weeks. And speaking of which, we're going down to West Virginia next week. That's a really competitive event for you guys, especially. Talk to us about
crazy
midseason for the diving aspect.
So, I mean, at a midseason meet, you can only really bring in so many swim teams just because they're so large. But as far as the diving portion goes, they kind of extend the invite to teams all over. So we'll be going up against Alabama divers, West Virginia divers, just like kids from everywhere. And it's not necessarily the swim teams that are going to be there. The, like, dive squads will travel independently without their swimmers to come compete. So it's going to be the best competition we face this year. It's probably going to be the most competitive meet, Big East being second to that. The only difference is, though, at midseason, the pressure is a little less. It's midseason. We don't, like, there are things on the line. We want good scores. We want good swims. But as far as what we can do within conference, we can't really accomplish that there. So while the pressure is off, the competition is going to be insane. So, yeah.
Yeah, I kind of looked at, there's a website called SwimClad, kind of college swimming in a nutshell. And I was looking at it the other night, like seeing who was entered. And I kind of knew from previously, but I saw the Alabama, the West Points. I'm like, we're not swimming against them. Like, please no, because Alabama is one of the top programs in the country.
Navy will be there too, right?
Navy's going to be there. Yeah. They're swimming. So it's going to be a very intense meet.
Wow.
It's just because it's just a lot of fast swimming, a lot of good diving. Now, I raised this question with our roommate Walker earlier today, actually. How many divers does Alabama and like Army carry? Is it like a 10-person team?
No,
how does that work?
Yeah, Alabama, from what I can remember last year, I think they might have had two or three girls and only one guy.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Whoa.
I don't really know what's up with their dive program. I think if you did some research, you could kind of find out why that might be the case. But this year, they picked up this girl, Julia Herring, from my club.
Oh, really? That's
so
awesome.
So it'll be nice to see her. She's really good, obviously, if she went to Alabama. But yeah, it's going to be fun. And then as far as Army, Army's team is a little bigger. We had dual meets against them my freshman and sophomore year. Freshman year, they came to us, and they had maybe 10 total.
Yeah.
Like
we had a whole different session.
Four guys and six girls. Yeah, we competed on a Friday, and then the swimmers went on Saturday just because it was a lot of them. And then when we went there, we swapped. We went to West Point last year, but, yeah, we traveled on a different day as well just because they got a lot and we got a lot too.
Yeah, and I'm excited to see you guys dive. Which stinks, like swimming and diving, it's going on at the same time because they have a dive well, and then you have the competition pool. So they're doing prelim diving and final diving while we're swimming.
Okay.
So we really don't get to watch what they're doing all the time.
It's like a track meet. Like, there's a lot of things going on at once. Yeah.
Because, like, it's time consuming. Like,
right.
At dual meets here, I love being at home, but not having a dive well. And with other pools, it's a lot. It's a long day, and it makes it even longer.
Sure.
So getting the opportunity for home meets when we don't have a dive well and getting to watch them dive is amazing because it's remarkable what they can do because put anybody else up on one of those 3 meter, 1 meter, doesn't matter. The flips and twists and all that.
Yeah.
No one else can do it. It's remarkable. Before we get started and before Seton Hall, what are some of the things you're looking forward to as the season continues? And what are some of the things that you have to continually work on?
Yeah. I'm really looking forward to locking down my consistency, to being able to get up and do a dive to the best of my ability every single time. And even if it's not to the best of my ability, like, it only goes a little bit short or a little bit over, rather than kind of being a guessing game. What I think is the biggest difference from last year to this year, last year I got really good at guessing. Okay. But this year I want to get really good at knowing when it's time to come out of my dive or when it's time to twist and when it's time to go for the water and stuff like that.
Got it. I'm so excited to get into the intricacies of diving because I know maybe the average folk knows all about basketball or knows about baseball, but I don't think the average person knows a lot about the intricacies of diving and like when to guess or when to be in terms of consistency. So I would love to learn more into that in a little bit.
Oh,
so yeah,
we're gonna get into it. Yeah, don't you worry. We're gonna we're gonna need like an in depth because I've been now here for 5 years. In high school, I didn't see diving or know anything about diving.
Sure,
I'm better at it now than I was my freshman year, but there's still a lot of confusion. I think it's gonna be a good to get an expert to explain it here.
Absolutely.
So before we get into all that, let's talk about time before Seton Hall. So what really got you into diving? Like, what was that core memory that said, okay, this is what I want to do?
Yeah, so before diving, like before springboard and water, it was trampoline and flips and just messing around in the front yard and seeing what I could do. That's always kind of what I thought was fun. I played other sports growing up. I played soccer. I played baseball for one season, which I really liked, but mom never signed me back up. I'm not really sure why. I played lacrosse for a very, very long time. Lacrosse was my first like love of sport. It was super fun, and just like the team aspect as well, the passing and the chemistry that could be created there was awesome. But I was a little on the smaller side my entire time growing up. So whenever I hit 6th, 7th, 8th grade, I was like maybe 4'8". And I'm going up against kids who have hit that growth spurt, who are 6'1", 6'2", 200 pounds. And it just became a little too much. Mm-hmm. But on the trampoline, I did my first backflip at the age of 8. I moved to my new neighborhood, and my friend had a trampoline in the backyard, and his dad was out there, and he spotted us, and I was the first one to do it. So I kind of like latched onto that a little bit, I think, and it became part of my identity, was being able to do stuff like that. And my friends really enjoyed it as well. But when lacrosse ended, I needed something to do. I wasn't just going to not do anything. So my mom said, what about diving? And I said, yeah, sure, that sounds like a lot of fun. So I started doing that in the 8th grade, although not too seriously until probably junior year of high school. I was just doing 2 hours of lesson every week with like maybe 16 kids at a practice and two boards. So 8 people, 1 hour, you're not getting that many dives in. You're getting maybe like 10, 11, 12 max. Mm-hmm. But then junior year, I was invited by this girl on my team, my high school team, to come down to Georgia Tech for one of her club practices. And I kind of snuck my way into that crowd, that scene, started doing that 2 hours, 3 days a week. And yeah, that's whenever I realized like, I can maybe go somewhere with this.
That's amazing. Starting that late as a junior, kind of realizing, I feel like with any sport, it's start young and kind of progress from there. So starting, for props to you, starting as a junior and working your way up to be able to compete at a D1 level. But my question was, I know that you part of your family is from Mountain Lakes, which is my rival town.
Yeah.
And there's a lake in Mountain Lakes that we used to swim at for our summer league that I know that they have a 3-meter board, and I think it's a 1-meter board. It's probably a little higher than a 1-meter board. Did that have impact on
depending on the
water level.
The water level of the lake. It could be 9 feet, it could be 10 feet. You never really know. But so my dad's from New Jersey. He was born in either East or West Orange. I don't really know. Sorry, Dad. But at the age of 8, he moved to Mountain Lakes, New Jersey, which is fantastic small little town. And we would go up there when I was younger to visit my grandparents, and I think I was five, and we went to the diving boards, and I was finally old enough to go off it, and I had a blast. And actually the Mountain Lakes, I don't know who it was, I think their club team said, hey, you want to join our team? And my dad said, sorry, he can't, he's from Georgia.
That's hilarious. Actually, it was probably most likely, so you were five, probably Dave Leschenhauer, who was one of my club coaches.
Yeah.
So we've gone back and forth with this in our house. There's a good shot at some point or another, me and him crossed paths at that lake and me swimming there and never would have known.
Wow.
You know? Like, because we were there every other year, home away meets, invitational stuff. Like there's a good shot that we ran paths and...
You got to look at old photos and see wait, is that me in the back right
so
there?
So that's really funny. So how has your family impacted your diving career?
Well, number one, support. Like, whatever I wanted to do, my parents were always very supportive of it. And even when I didn't want to do it, I think a tough part for my dad, especially in high school, right? Maybe like sophomore year, freshman year, I was really scared of doing front two and a half on 1 meter to the point where I would do anything to get out of practice. I would come up with excuses. I wouldn't go because I didn't want to do it. I didn't want to smack. I didn't want to hurt myself. And my dad would get upset with me for that. And looking back, I understand why, but I think what clicked was when he kind of said, okay, he has to make the decision for himself. If this is something that he wants, I can't make him want it. And so he kind of took a step back, and then all these things happened, and here I am.
No, that is amazing. And speaking of family, I know you have a really close relationship with your older brother, Will. Talk about that relationship and how he kind of, I don't want to say, I don't know if inspires the right word, but how he kind of motivates you to get through your dives.
Yeah, so Wilski, my older brother, he's 22. He has Down syndrome. And growing up, he was my first best friend. And it was kind of cool because with, like, he's a little delayed in learning. So while he's 18 months older than me, or whatever it is, 20 months older than me, a lot of the things that we learned at the same time. Like, we got potty trained at the same time, kind of started talking at the same time, all these things at the same time. So we were really good buddies. But eventually, as we got older, I kind of moved on to bigger things, like that a normal kid would get to, and he stayed behind. But he's taught me a lot about life. He's taught me a lot about understanding and patience and, like, what it means to care for somebody regardless of what they can provide for you. Mm-hmm. Not to mention that he is a goofball. He is what I would like to call a butthead. He would not like me saying that. I hope he listens to this because he gets really upset when I call him that, but it's a joke and he'll call me back. So yeah, Wilski's my bro.
I have to ask you, did he see the picture of me in Walker dressed as
Oh, he did. He loved it.
Oh, perfect. As a Halloween costume, Walker's brother, who also has Down syndrome.
No, he has autism.
Autism. He told Walker, he's like, oh, I'm going to dress up as a Wiggle. So Walker was like, oh, I'll get the whole house to dress up as Wiggle, as like a kind of like a symbolic thing, because sure. Walker's brother's down in Florida. Yeah. Like, hey, we'll dress up with you. Walker's brother then changed his costume about 3 weeks later to, I think it was a scuba diver.
Yeah.
So we stayed as Wiggles, and then Quinn's mom was up here and got to take pictures of both of us. So I'm glad that he got to see those and kind of made his day. So that's great to hear. I'm going to kind of change focus here a little bit here from family back to kind of diving, if that's okay with you.
Yeah.
So did you have like a diver that kind of inspired you to compete at a higher level?
I wouldn't necessarily say that it was a diver, but like I definitely had athletes and people in my life that I looked up to that I saw succeeding in whatever they found to be enjoyable. Kids at my club team, really good kids, especially the older kids. Actually, yeah, no, I did have kids. Now I'm thinking about it. There were kids at the lesson group. I remember they could, maybe a couple years older, but they could do these tricks that at the time I thought were insane. Like so crazy, and I thought it was so cool. So yeah, they pushed me. Watching them was really cool. But it also seemed really far out of reach. And now looking back, it's kind of trivial because it's stuff that I've moved past. And like to a younger kid, I guess it would be hard. But now it's kind of just stuff I do every day. So yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome. You got to have those role models to kind of jumpstart your love for a sport.
Right, yeah. I mean, and plus too, with diving, I mean, I think there's a lot more. And this is at least made me off the cuff here. There's a lot more like role models, like in the more like straight up sports, like basketball,
yeah,
and baseball, and whatnot. And to find like people that you really like mesh with that have like, okay, I want to be like them is really important. And the fact that like you're like, okay, they can do this is like they're not that far off from me. Like I can probably do that someday,
yeah,
if I keep working on it and all that. So mm-hmm. It's awesome.
Yeah, that is for sure. When you got recruited by colleges, what were some of the things that you highlighted? And what were the ways, because swimming and diving recruiting is completely different stories, like any other sport. Swimming, obviously, it's time standards. Obviously,
right.
Diving is scores. So what are you some of the things you're highlighting when getting recruited?
Yeah, so my best way to explain my recruiting process is that it didn't happen. I did not put myself out there. I did not email any schools. I definitely should have, because I think I underestimated my potential and my skills at the time. But yeah, I didn't put myself out there at all. And so what ended up happening was that a coach from St. Bonaventure was in town in Georgia, and I was at practice and he was coaching us. And so he watched me, and then he was my coach for that practice. Like, he was the one giving me the feedback and the corrections. And at the end of it, he said, hey kid, like, give me your information. You could definitely go somewhere. I'll send it out. So that's what happened. This guy blessed me. And then on Seton Hall's side, Seton Hall had three freshman commits. One of them dropped out last second, like very, very late. And they were kind of scrambling to find a replacement for him. And so they found me like last minute. I committed late May. And yeah, I ended up here.
What would be some of the things that you would have done to kind of put yourself out there? Would it be sending scores? Would it be sending like highlight tapes? Would it be giving lists of dives that you can do?
Yeah, so I mean, as far as high school scoring, it's kind of silly. You can get some crazy scores in high school. the judges don't necessarily, like, they might not necessarily have been divers. It might be people who just signed up to judge the diving meet. So, like, a high school 8 is not a college 8 by any means. It's probably, like, a college 5.5. So I wouldn't go by scores, but what I would have done if I could go back is I would have filmed a lot, and I would have sent these videos out, and I would have emailed schools, just like, even if it's a far-off shot, no chance.
Right.
An email can't hurt, because the worst they can say is no.
Exactly.
Yeah, so I think that's what I would have done, but to be honest, I'm glad I didn't, because now I'm here, and this is my home.
That's awesome, and what a cool, unique story you kind of had. A really awesome figure in your life, be like, hey, like, you're good, I'm going to like help you out and
yeah,
you know, get you where you deserve to go. And it's, I just was laughing. The scores are so like relative, right? So like
yeah,
a high school 8 is like a college 5.5. You said it's like strike zone in baseball, like yeah, a high school strike versus like yeah, a college strike versus a pro strike and all that. So like, it's interesting to know that like, it's not really about the score that you have in high school. It's more about the quality of the dive through film, which is really important, which college coaches like want to see.
Yeah.
It's really interesting to kind of take the,
I mean,
take note of.
Like if you did a deep dive into my scores from high school, I was breaking 300 on 1 meter with like an extremely easy list.
Mm-hmm.
And in college, 300 is the NCAA zone cut.
Yep.
Got it.
And it's like pretty hard to get. You gotta have a really good meet. You gotta be consistent. And you also have to have the difficulty to go along with it. So
right,
I think it's funny to look back, like my 6 dive scores, my 11 dive scores from high school. There's no reason I should have been getting those, but I did.
So let's kind of break that down. You kind of already started to. First question for me about diving scoring and like all the intricacies of it. What goes into diving scoring? Because obviously it's not a set number. There's a little bit of subjectivity to it, like a strike zone, like you just said. So
right,
what goes into a score?
Yeah, so a score, first off, it depends on the degree of difficulty of the dive. So an easier dive, the degree of difficulty is a multiplier. So you'll get, so like say you do a front 1.5. It's pretty low difficulty.
Mm-hmm.
And say you do it for 7. So you'll get 21 points multiplied by whatever front 1.5's degree of difficulty is.
Okay.
But if you're doing a front 2.5, then you get that and you get 7s. You get that times that difficulty, which is higher. And then front 3.5 is higher. So
sure,
that's kind of what goes into scoring. But as far as what a judge is looking for, they're looking for form in the hurdle, they're looking for rotation in the air, and they're looking for entry into the water. And there's a lot of like small stuff. And every single direction, there are 5 of them in diving, and 6 if you include platform. But you have fronts, backs, reverses, inwards, and twisters. So yeah, like, and each of those has its own technique associated with it, its own thing that you need to do to make it happen. So, yeah, that's really what the judges are looking for. They're looking for a combination of difficulty and execution.
So just to make clear, the hurdle is the part where you are walking up the diving board.
Yep. The hurdle is all the preparation before you finally take off into the air to enter the water.
Got it.
So what has been the hardest difficulty dive that you've been able to do so far, whether that's at Seton Hall or in your high school career?
Yeah, so the hardest difficulty dive that I compete, it's between 2 things. And the latter one that I'm going to mention, I've only competed 1 time, and that was this past weekend.
Mm-hmm.
But so I do a back 1.5 flips, 2.5 twists on 1 meter, which is, I don't really know. This is also another interesting thing about me as far as like you guys were asking diving role models. I don't really follow the sport, which it might sound terrible, but I like, it's more so just something that I enjoy doing myself, but I don't really care to like, I mean, I'll watch Instagram reels of people diving it, but I don't follow competitions. I don't really follow like the lore behind it. So yeah, the degree of difficulty, I don't even really know the scores. I could look them up, but I don't know the numbers specifically. So back 1.5, 2.5 twists is on 1 meter is one of my harder dives. And then this past weekend, it's something I've been working on this season. It's been front 3.5 pike on 3 meter, which is a hard dive, especially to do well. And it's something that I've been getting better at, but I still need to come a long way on.
And you kind of talked about that with the consistency aspect of it. It's, yeah. I know because I watch, I'm a lifeguard for one of their dive practices.
Okay.
So for 2 hours, I'm watching them flip and hurdle and all this stuff. And his process of work is interesting. He's like head dive coach Ben Mitchell will have a list of things that they have to get through kind of each day. And the way Quinn goes through that list, but if he gets stuck on one, he's going back to that dive until he gets it right at least once. Mm. And is that kind of
No, that's true. It
kind of correct?
It bugs me. It bugs me yeah. when I can't get it. And I almost can't move on until I feel like I've gotten one that I can be happy with.
There was one dive you were doing on 3 meter. I think kind of this, I want to say October, where I'd come up for practice or I'd be sitting there. It's like, coach, I got to do it again. It's not right. And it was just a little bit off, and you knew it was a little bit off. And he's like, I got to do it again. And he's like, okay, let's see it again. And sometimes it was the same outcome, but he's like, I got to do it again. I got to do it again. And I think that's just a testament to his work ethic and why he's been able to do such great things on the diving boards.
100%. And it's cool to kind of see how in the beginning of your diving career, you were kind of doing anything you possibly could to not dive.
Yeah.
You're telling your dad, like, no, I'm doing this and that, another thing just to not dive or not do this and anything. And then now you're doing anything possible to get more dives in. And it's kind of cool to see that evolution over time.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's even funny now because our diving and swim practice line up. So Ben will go, okay, it's time for the swimmers to get in. You guys got to be done. No, no, wait, I got one more.
I love that.
Yeah, there will be maybe a minute and a half left on the clock. And yeah, if I can get one more off, I'm going to do it.
That's funny.
In a typical dive practice, how many dives would we be typically doing?
Yeah, so we've counted it. It depends on, like, if it's a drill practice where you're really just trying to drill the fundamentals and the basics and not necessarily the bigger stuff, like what I would equate it to in baseball when you're warming up.
Okay.
You don't start throwing 100 yards. You start closer, and then you kind of work your way back.
Right.
So it's the same in diving. You might start with, instead of 3.5 flips, you start with a half flip,
okay.
just a front dive.
Right.
And then you go to front 1.5, front 2.5, front 3.5. And with each of those, you might do 2 or 3 reps. But we've had practices here where we've probably done 80, 90, 100 dives at a time.
Oh, my goodness. I was not anticipating that many dives.
Yeah.
In a practice? One practice?
Yeah. Yeah. And that's climbing up the board, going off it, getting in the water, getting out of the water, going back.
Oh, my gosh.
It's a different – so, like, we're, like, in a big aerobic sport. So
yeah.
All aerobic. Right. Theirs is a completely different aerobic because it's all the intricacies of getting out of the water, climbing up a ladder, going through your hurdle, like, calming your breath.
Yeah.
Like, it's so much in-depth aerobically than you ever would think.
And we've had this conversation before, but People are going to comment if they read this or listen to it, whatever they do with it. But it's funny because you guys arguably do more flips in a practice than we do. And we arguably travel more yards in a practice than you do.
Oh, that is really interesting.
It's crazy to think about.
Yeah, here we go.
No, but here's the thing. With the sprinters, maybe. But I don't think you guys are going to travel 6,000 to 7,000 yards in a day.
I don't know.
We need a step
counter. Well, it's not just a step counter, though, because you climb up that ladder, you're 10 feet up in the air.
Right.
And then you go to the end of it, and you jump up, and you might be another 8-9 feet in the air. And then you go from 18-19 feet in the air to the bottom of the pool, which is
12-16
feet. It's deep. And then you come back up, and you get out, and you do it again 90 to 100 times. Not to mention how much you're walking around behind the boards. It's
an interesting debate.
Yeah, yeah.
Because like it really depends on which group you're focusing on. So I can definitely, like, no offense, sprinters, but like you're not touching what the distance guys are doing.
Yeah.
And 6,000 to 7,000 yards. When we look at that, we're like, whew,
that's a lot.
That's
a
lot.
Yeah.
But I can also see definitely the way you just broke it down is perfect because even before you're diving, you're doing dry land and doing other stuff to get the heart rate up. So it's an interesting topic of conversation. It's an interesting debate. It's very interesting.
I would have never thought of anything like that.
No. I've never thought of it. When are you having this debate?
I've talked with it I've talked about it with Walker. Walker gives me trouble on it. But it's interesting, especially with the flip turns that you guys do. You guys do a bunch of flip turns.
I think you would still do more. I don't think we're doing up to 90.
I was just nodding.
I want to lose sleep over this. Thanks.
It's okay. Well, it was something to bring up, but
for all swimmers out there, there'll be a big debate in the locker room next week.
So. Somebody do the math.
That's a big math equation.
Yeah, who's
our good math guy?
I don't know.
Ben isn't Ben. Oh, Walker, you're
Walker's
right. Yeah.
A good math
well,
guy.
No, Walker's biased. Somebody out there listening. Somebody out there listening who's not involved.
We need to
crunch the numbers and send them to
from
us.
A different, we need Seton Hall would swim and dive can't be involved at all. It'd be very biased.
Yeah.
Do you have any baseball guys that are good at math?
I have a few guys in mind that
I'll
send a little text letter. Hey, what question for you?
We have a science experiment real quick. Yeah. Can you come help us out? So I have another question about the diving aspect of things. What constitutes a good board? It's like you've talked about this is a good board, this is a bad board. What constitutes that?
I mean, age, like how used it is.
Okay.
If it's been broken in, just like a new pair of shoes. And then also, not necessarily just the board, but maybe the area around it. So we were at Drexel, and Drexel had a wall pretty close to the end of the board, like maybe 2 or 3 feet in between the end of the board, not on the water side, but where you start, and the wall. And so that can make it difficult for spotting. And spotting's like when you're flipping, you're looking. So you'll come around one flip, and you'll see something in your surroundings that kind of tells you where you are relative to where the water might be, relative to where you are in the air, like stuff like that. In pools, like this semester, we talked about Ryder. Ryder was difficult because Ryder had this red strip at the end of, like, so you're walking down the diving board, and they had this red strip on the other side of the pool from the floor to the ceiling. So when you're flipping and you come around and you're looking for something to, like, figure out where you are, it's just red from the ground to, like, 60 feet in the air.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, you had one of your worst smacks there.
Yeah.
Right before we're about to start, he just goes, boom! Like, pretty bad
smack. I got got.
Yeah. Ooh. And he was just like, he's like swimming over. And sometimes, like, when they people smack, it's like, oh, okay. Like, you're okay. But this one, he was just like, time out. Pause for a second.
Yeah, this one need a minute. It was particularly bad because I really thought I had it. So when I kicked out, I was super confident. And I was in a really like straight line, but rather than going in on my hands, my hands were to the wall across from me, and I was just flat on the water. But that's part of it. You kind of sign up for that every once in a while if this is what you're doing.
True.
You gotta take those smacks once in a while, as you just said. So last question, really about Seton Hall swim and dive. You've been getting taught by previous Big East champion Ben Mitchell, who's now the head dive coach here at Seton Hall. Got to sit down and kind of talk to him for a couple minutes during practice, and he had some stuff to say that I want to talk to you about, and I want to kind of pick your brain on. He said, not only skill-wise, but his conditioning and physique is exactly what you ask for in a good diver. He looks like a strong diver on the board, and it's one of the ways it helps him get a higher score. His work ethic is always at 110%, rarely ever showing signs of lost energy, which always is a good thing when it comes to competition. One of his best perks is he knows to do the dive better when he knows there's going to be a score behind the dive, to do as best as he can to string it together with consistency. I want to ask you about, he told me a story as well about when you were winning 3 meter. You're ahead on 3 meter, and kind of he said that you guys had that telepathy of, okay, we know we have it kind of in the bag, but we have to convert the dive. What was that like for you at last year's Big East to like kind of know you're going into your last dive, hey, I got this? And your coach knows you got it. What was that like for you?
Yeah, so that was fun. With that meet and with meets in general, there's kind of a strategy behind the order in which you do things. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, every diver has a different strategy. But for me, I like to start off with on 3 meter inward 2.5 tuck, which is there's no hurdle behind it. You're just standing start. So you can't really get a bad hurdle. And it's pretty consistent for me. Like, I can find it. So I always get off to a good start. And then I go to at Big East, I went to front 2.5 pike, which was a relatively easy dive. I had signed up front 3.5, but in the warm-up, I could not find it to save my life. So I said, Coach, and this was kind of like speaking on like coach and athlete trust. I said, Coach, I'm not doing it because I'm going to get bad scores on it. It's like maybe a 5 out of 10 chance that I hit it and 5 out of 10 chance that I really mess it up. So I said, I'm going to opt for the easier dive that I know I can do consistently and well. So I did front 2.5. I was 2 for 2, easy. And then I get kind of into, well, no, and then I had full out. Full out is also consistent for me. I can normally find it. And then I get into kind of the trenches for a minute when I go to my reverse 2.5 and my back 2.5, especially last year. These are my least consistent dives. And the only time at Big East where I was really nervous on the board was 3-meter final, reverse 2.5. Like, nerves didn't get to me the entire time, and I was up there, and I got a little nervous because I knew if you hit it, you got it. If you don't hit it, anything can happen.
We have some work to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But luckily, I was able to do it all right. It wasn't great, but speaking on consistency, like, you don't need perfection every time. You just need it to be. And this is what I say to my coach. I say to Ben all the time because he wants me to do as well as I can. But whenever we're at meets and I do a dive and I go in and he gives me a bunch of corrections, I say, Coach, was it okay? Was it okay? And he says, yeah, it was okay. And for me at meets, that's all I really need to hear. If it's okay, then yeah. I'm in good shape. And then I went to my back, had a good back. And at this point, Big East last year was also – The final score was a culmination of prelims and finals. So mm-hmm. I had a really good prelim meet. I went up, I think, like 10 points on second. And finals through 5 of 6, I was in good shape. And I save my last dive is another dive that I can consistently do that's, like, pretty easy for me. So getting up there, I knew as long as something didn't go terribly wrong, I had it. And that was really fun. And I did the same thing on 1 meter. I kind of saved the last one to be one that I can do if I really need to do it. No pressure in that moment. It was really, really fun because I could just enjoy it. I knew I was going to do it all right, and I knew when I came up I probably had it.
It's so interesting to learn about the strategy for diving and diving in meets, and it's also really cool to understand and appreciate the athlete, as you said, the athlete-coach trust and relationship and how important that is for diving. Because obviously there's different sports where, like, a coach is putting in different players at different times. Like, you're really talking with your coach throughout these meets. Like, okay, like, I'm going to do this. And he's giving you all your pointers, but you're saying, okay, like, I don't need that information right now. Is it okay? Yep, it's okay. All right, cool. We're on the same page. Like having constant communication and trust seems really, really important in diving. I would have never really guessed that. So it's really cool to learn that and learn all about the strategy as well.
Yeah, that is for sure. And I can't wait to see how you progress through the year, especially at WVU or West Virginia, at this invite, great competition. And it's a real prep. Swim, dive, it's a real prep to see what we got going on at the end of February and see where we're at. This is like that first little, this is like the second little, I guess, check mark, I guess you could say.
Yeah.
I guess that first check mark is first meet of the year, the mm-hmm. two dual meets. Second check mark, midseason invitational. And then after that, it's a real, just a grind. It's winter training, basically. It's a lot of swimming, a lot of diving, and just tweaking those little things that you did at midseason to get you better for February. So
awesome.
We're excited for it. Let's go do some stuff.
Yeah, definitely. I think we will.
I think we will too. So I want to divert from the diving conversation. I know you're a big music junkie. I know it. The guy always has earbuds in. He has his headphones on. He's always listening to music. So what does music help you do throughout your day? Is it a way to escape, or is it a way to, like, have a creative outlet? Like, what does music do for you?
Music gets me going, and it keeps me going. Yeah, I think a lot of people can relate to me when I say that. Like, I don't know. It's just nice. I get these little earworms, and whenever I can put my headphones on and listen to a song, maybe in, like, a brief 15-minute break of something, it's enough to kind of take my mind off maybe what might be happening, but also focus me into, like, a whole different world.
Mm-hmm. I know that from personal experience living with him. We have a really good size speaker in our house. And I think 9 times out of 10, he's on it. He'll be cooking in the kitchen. We'll listen to the Beatles one moment, and then the next moment we're listening to something else. We'll be listening to rap. And then we'll go back to Beatles. And then we'll go to, I don't even know what. We'll go all over the place. Do you have a favorite type of music genre?
No, I don't think I do. It's kind of, and it also depends on the day, because, like, a lot of people, actually, I don't know, but people ask me, like, what my favorite song is. Mm-hmm. It changes every single day. It's really just depends on what I wake up, and, like, it could be a song I haven't heard in months. Sometimes it'll just pop into my head, and it'll be like really, really good. And I know you said moving on from diving, but going back to Big East, big thing for me was that Van Morrison moon dance got me through the meet. it got me through the entire week, and it like was an escape on the board to take that pressure off. When I was standing up there for most of my dives, except for the reverse, and honestly, Van Morrison is what kind of calmed me down there. Mm. I was humming that in my head before I went, not really thinking about what could go right, what could go wrong, just thinking about that and knowing that my body has done the stuff that I need to do hundreds of times, and it's capable of it, and all I need to do is do it. I don't need to think about it.
Right. So it's kind of like the music just kind of allows that to happen. Like, yeah. Like there's no, obviously, there's, when you're in a like a diving competition, there's a lot of other factors that go on outside of practice. But when you have the music on, it's kind of like you're just trusting what you did all in practice and all that. And the music kind of just like take over that.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Oh, then I have a, speaking of which, I've walked the plane questions. Woo, I have a doozy then. I have a doozy question for you later on. So get ready, buddy.
Okay.
But going back to the music and going into diving, you guys, which I find really cool is like during any practice, you got music going on. But I feel like with diving, especially, you have a very creative playlist between all six divers, seven divers, eight
yeah,
divers,
seven, there's seven
divers
of us
in total. And it rotates throughout different genres and stuff like that. How does diving, I feel like with diving, you got to be more of a quiet state and kind of be able to concentrate. How does the music help you go through those dive practices?
Well, first off, I think it makes it more of a comfortable environment. It doesn't really feel like, I mean, it's a practice. It feels like a practice, but it doesn't really feel super, super, like the stakes are up. Mm. It's kind of like a low key, it's chill. And when you're not diving, you can kind of like fall into that world a little bit, like I talked about earlier. And as far as our playlist, we have everything on it because our system this year is that Ben has the playlist and mm-hmm. we can go over to the board, and if there's a song we want on it, we'll write it on the board and he'll add it.
Nice.
So I don't know how many songs we're up to now, but there's a lot of them and you can get anything.
Nice.
And as a team, we have such different tastes that mm-hmm. you can go from anywhere to anywhere. It has to be clean for practice, mm-hmm. but we don't really struggle with that too much. Like we still, there's plenty of songs that we like that are clean.
Yeah. I found it interesting. Last year we were at Delaware. That was a really tough meet. It was their senior day. And I think we were coming off a back-to-back where we were, I think the guys team was back-to-back. I think we saw NJIT on the road, which is not down the road, but then we had to go to Delaware, which is like, that's a 3-hour trip.
Sure.
And the divers killed it. But I remember the biggest thing that you said was, that Quinn said was, it just feels like a practice. They have this low like music in the background just playing. And he's like, this is easy. Like it's just practice for us. And like that pressure, you could tell I think they went 1-2. You and Trevor went 1-2, I think. And absolutely killed it. So it's an interesting aspect that you never think about music diving and how that all interworks.
And also it's good to practice in environments that you're not necessarily comfortable with.
Sure.
Because some of these pools that you go to, you don't get to pick what's gonna be happening there.
Right.
Drexel was crazy because we were diving and swimming at the same time. So while we're trying to focus on our dives, you have like maybe a 50 free going on in the other pool and people are screaming or breaststroke specifically at this meet was bad because when the breaststrokers come up out of the water to take their breath, everybody goes up and people are whistling and it's super duper loud.
Interesting.
So to practice with noise and sometimes for it to get a little crazy at practice isn't the worst thing because that might be what happens in a meet.
Sure.
Yeah, and especially at Big East, it's kind of going at the same time, a lot of noise and stuff like that. I'm going to kind of divert from music into your faith. I know you do a lot of stuff for here on campus within your faith. So how does faith impact you each and every day?
Yeah, I guess it's just a kind of like music. It's a place to ground myself outside of the moment, outside of the stresses of everyday life, like what might be going on, what I need to do. Because regardless of what happens at the end of the day, I have that to lean back on. Sunday, I like to go to church. We go to church off campus at OLS, and for me, that's like my peace. Mm. Especially after receiving communion and kneeling in the pews, there's just like a little moment of reflection. And that's probably my favorite part of the week, is just like, it's quiet. Well, it's not necessarily quiet, but it's peaceful. There's beautiful music playing, like organs and choir singing. They have a great choir over there. And normally I have either my friends with me or my dad will come down and he'll go to church with me. But it's a really good moment. It's a moment where, touching back on Wilski, like, normally I try to send him a hug in church, just a little hug. Mm-hmm. I wonder if he feels it. I think he probably does. But yeah, it's just it's a nice little pause from the rest of the week.
Yeah, that is for sure. And I know that you're a part of a Bible study here within the swim team. You do a lot of stuff with campus ministry. Is there anything that you've done that has been your favorite?
Yeah, so we've been struggling with the Bible study this year. As far as like the campus ministry swim team relation, we had my freshman year, we had this guy, James O'Hare. James was fantastic. And then last year, we got this other guy. But then something came up in his family and he had to leave. So we kind of like, it was kind of on us from that point. And with structuring a schedule around everybody that wants to come, it's hard to get 6, 7, 8 guys to sit down at the same time. But we're starting it back up. I think we have our first like official meeting of the year, Bible study meeting, this Wednesday. So any of you swimmers who want to come out, feel free.
Yeah, and I was going to add on, I think Dylan is our new campus ministry guy, and he's great. He's been doing some of the fall sports, and the baseball guys have one at the grad house, and we have some soccer guys come over, and I know Dylan hasn't been able to get to all the teams yet, so we would love it if at one point we could get to baseball guys, swim guys, soccer guys, get a little...
Freshman year, that's what we did. We would have, I remember that. We would have soccer kids, we'd have swim kids.
It's fun, it's great.
Have a bunch of people.
It's great to like interact and get to know other guys outside of their sport, outside of the rec.
I was just about to say, does that make it even a better experience for you guys? Having
100%. I think
100%.
I think that'd be something interesting to see like going forward.
Yeah.
That more. And then you have other opportunities where you can do kind of multiple and meet different people and talk about different things during those times.
And plus, too, like I know we have the awesome opportunity to interview our guests and get to know them on a more personal basis for like an hour. Mm-hmm. When you're talking to someone outside of like their sport or outside of like the rec, you're learning more about their life than you wouldn't have like any other opportunity to learn about them like in that way. It's a good time. And I encourage all student athletes to do that.
Yeah. It's definitely that something that I, even though I'm a fifth year, I want to get more into just to unlock that spiritual part of me more. So, and just talk to people about it. It's something that during undergrad, it was something that I was a little shaky on, but now as I've gotten older, it's something that's been growing on me.
And then too, you don't have to be, I mean, Quinn, you can probably speak, you don't have to be super religious.
Everybody's
like
in different places.
Yeah.
That's amazing. We're going to touch briefly here on some of the academic stuff. There's one question that I really want to ask, because we're kind of running out of time here. So your grandfather got to do some pretty cool stuff. He got to cover the Masters for how many years? A lot of
like
years.
50 a
years.
Bunch.
And then he also got to do other sporting events like the Braves.
Yeah, so
and other things. Well, had that had an what impact did that have on you when choosing what you wanted to do academically?
Yeah, so originally I think it's kind of something that I don't really know. He's a big influence and he's very successful. He's in the Georgia Sports Hall of Fame. Phil Schaefer is his name.
Wow.
But he had a great, great career. Went to Ohio State and he had classes with Jack Nicklaus and Jack Nicklaus's wife. And then he goes to Georgia, ends up covering the Masters, and Jack Nicklaus wins it, I think, 6 times or something.
Wow.
But like side by side. So he's got very, very esteemed career. And to be able to watch him and like the things that he's done. And when I came to the world, he was a little like on the later end of it. I think he was working in a school system. Like, he had kind of moved on, but still involved. But, yeah, like, watching him and seeing that somebody that I know so closely was able to do it kind of gives me, like, a little bit more faith in where I could go with what I want to do.
Now, you got to go to this past year's Masters with him.
Yeah.
What was that like? Because he's kind of, I don't want to say he's a celebrity, but he's kind of a celebrity there. What was that experience like? Did you get to meet any other connections through that? Through your grandfather?
No, not really. We were just on the holes watching. We went to I don't know what day it was. It was one of the days with no phones, but it wasn't, I don't think, the start. But it was really, really cool. I think it was for placement maybe, or like tee times.
Probably Friday.
Something like that. Mm-hmm. Really, really cool, and it was his last one. The last one he's gonna go to. Because he's kinda done with it. it's been great to him, but at the same time, he after doing it 55 straight years, like
that's a long time. Yeah,
he's kind of good on it. So it was really special, and it was something that I don't think I'll ever forget.
Yeah, that's such a cool experience. And I just remember, I think you told me as you were moving into our house that we live in now. He's like, oh, yeah, by the way, my grandfather is part of the Georgia Broadcaster Hall of Fame.
Just by the way.
Right? Sports.
Sports Hall of
Fame.
Yeah,
not even broadcaster.
So he's like, just by the way, yeah, he's pretty cool. I'm like, that's really cool. So as we wrap up here, we're going to get into our last two segments here. First, advice to a pirate. So you've experienced great success in your first 2 years at Seton Hall with becoming a Big East champion in your sophomore year. It's amazing. What advice would you give to any pirate that has tasted that early success looking to keep improving each and every year?
Trust the process. I think that's a big thing. My freshman year, I was close, but I didn't get it. And so, and also some more advice, stay hungry. Like, don't lose that drive to want to be better, even if you think you're really good. Keep going. You can always be better. And I think balance the highs and lows. Don't really get too high on yourself. Don't get too low on yourself. And the final piece of advice I would give to a student athlete here is to have fun in what you're doing. Really enjoy it. Don't get too stressed out, because at the end of the day, it's college sports. It's not the Olympics. And while it is really, really important, there are more important things in life, I feel like, later that are coming. So just kind of take everything with a grain of salt and keep that perspective.
Beautiful.
That's awesome. That's really insightful information, especially the part. This is not the most important thing in the world. You know, it's just something we do. It's not who we are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a lot of things going on outside of the world, like school and academics and stuff like that, or just doing radio stuff that like we're doing right now. So, as you know, being one of the people on this production most of the times, you know what time it is. It's time for Walk the Plank. We got some questions here for you that we're ready to go. There's one of them that I need you to do some ranking for us. So get ready.
Uh-oh.
Hope you're buckled in, because it's a doozy.
Okay.
Go to post-meet meal.
Oftentimes, we don't really get a choice, but pizza.
if it wasn't pizza, like, let's say
Chipotle. Probably Chipotle.
Burrito, bowl.
I would get a bowl.
Steak, chicken.
It depends on the day, but
You just want
it's like the music. It depends on what day it is.
Chicken, rice, beans, cheese, lettuce, tomato, corn. No, I don't get queso.
Interesting. Okay. You're a big Trader Joe's proponent. You love that place. You're there every Tuesday morning at about 9 a.m.
Yeah.
What is your go-to purchase?
Something that another one of the swimmers, Sean Vizard, put me onto is the buffalo chicken dip. They got buffalo chicken dip, and it's pretty good. It's like a nice little snack, especially after practice. I get home, and while I might be making other food, I can kind of snack on that while I wait for whatever I'm making to be done.
Yeah, not to shout out Ethan Shonk or Bryant LaCroix. They like their chicken dip as well. Shout out to them. So we didn't really get to touch on it here, and I want to have you on at a later date to talk about movies, but what is your favorite all-time movie?
Dude, I don't know. I have no idea.
Can you give us like a top three?
I can't give you a movie.
Show, maybe?
It's not my favorite all-time show. It's kind of like a movie. But if you've ever seen Nathan For You, like a Comedy Central special with Nathan Fielder, it's really good. But on HBO, he has this thing called The Rehearsal. And it's just, it's so, so crazy what he does. He gets, like, finds these people who have these problems. And, like, they're going to have to deal with them at some point. So to help them, he sets up a simulated version of what they're going to have to deal with eventually with, like, paid actors and like, breaks down the environment to the most minute detail, like, by building a set. So, like, this one guy was playing trivia at a bar. And to help him, he had to reveal a secret to one of his trivia buddies. So he built a set, and he went out, and he found these actors that looked like the guy's friend and who might be there, and he found the stools, and if the stools had like a chunk missing out of them, he would replicate everything perfectly. But it's a really good show, and it gets pretty crazy, like, psychologically, what happens to these people.
Interesting. I'm going to have to tune into that. I've never heard of it. So, next one. Rank these five albums. I have them written out here, but I'm going to read them out loud too. Igor by Tyler, the Creator. College Dropout by Kanye. Man on the Moon by Kid Cudi. Magical Mystery Tour by the Beatles, and Rumors by Fleetwood Mac.
Well, this isn't fair.
That's so fair.
This is not fair because they're not the same thing.
I know. It's kind of five of your top favorite people that you listen to.
I don't think I've ever listened to Man on the Moon in its entirety. So I'll put that one last.
Okay,
I also don't think I've listened to Rumors. I probably have, but like, it's not necessarily something I would have on my playlist or on repeat.
Fair enough.
Magical Mystery Tour might have to be number one because it has
2-3 here. Aha! I've stumped him.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like you could have gave me better songs, but.
Albums.
But with what I got left, I don't know.
Don't blame the question. These are the five that I gave you. And I know these are your top. Not, I wouldn't say your top five, but these are some of the things I hear constantly.
Igor is something that I think at least for the moment being, moved on from. So I'll put that too. And then College Dropout, you can't really ever go wrong with it. I'll put College Dropout 2, Igor 3.
Fair enough.
Magical Mystery Tour 1. Rumors for a Man on the Moon 5.
All right, fair enough.
Well,
you
done.
Got there. I'm proud of you. Good job.
didn't like that question
at all. We are traveling to Cumming, Georgia. What are me and Jonathan doing? What do we have?
What are you gonna do?
Yeah.
You're gonna leave. No, I'm just kidding. You're not gonna leave. You're gonna have a great time. We'll go down to Fieldstone. And we'll play some volleyball. If it's the summer, we'll play volleyball. If it's the fall, we'll probably still play volleyball, and if it's the spring, we'll probably still play volleyball.
All right.
And if it's the winter and it happens to be a nice day outside, we'll probably play volleyball.
Okay, great.
We can go to Sawney Mountain. We can hike up that. It's a pretty good vantage point, nice view. And we'll probably drive around a lot.
Listen to some tunes. That's fantastic. I got to talk to one of your best friends, Britt Baker, and he told me Quinn is thoughtful, selfless, and a leader. He has a nasty habit of leaving everywhere he goes better than he found it. Always cleans up after himself, and he takes care of the people around him. He came up with another interesting story. What was it like working with him at Locos Ricardos?
Oh, Locos Ricardos was crazy. It was crazy. I couldn't believe it was real. This guy, I don't even know if I should say this, but I'm going to say it anyways. This guy paid us through Venmo, and he paid us $15 an hour to delivery drive for him. But most of the time we were there, we were just sitting there doing nothing.
Interesting.
So I don't really know the legitimacy of this business, but it was good money, especially for like a junior in high school.
Oh, yeah. Fair enough.
Yeah.
A little sketchy. That's what he told me too. He said it was a little sketchy.
He was a nice guy though. And I think he had kids in the school systems around us, but yeah, it was not the best.
Business.
No, it was good. No? It was good. I liked it.
Fair enough. I know in our house we've set up a Wii room. We have a TV dedicated to a Wii. What is your favorite Wii game?
Yeah, well, I really liked Wii Sports Resort growing up, or just the generic Wii Sports. Those are really good. But specifically in New Jersey, something that we play a lot is Super Mario Bros. Last year, a lot myself, Charles Pitta, and Joel Satir would sit down there and we would play for hours. But the best part about it wasn't necessarily the game. It was kind of like the sabotage and grabbing your friend and throwing him into the fire and losing your lives and, yeah, beating the levels every once in a while, but mainly just the shenanigans that went along with it.
Yeah, I'd walk down the stairs sometimes at 1 or 2 in the morning. They'd still be down there playing. I'm like, guys, you got to go to bed. Like, come on, we got to practice in the morning. Best piece of advice your parents have given you?
There's some good ones. I mean, I guess just the best advice I think I've gotten from my parents is to let those around you know that you love them, that you care about them, and to not be afraid to like be vulnerable with people and to let them know. If you think somebody's doing a good job at something, if you think somebody's, like if somebody inspires you, if somebody, like if they have qualities that you really appreciate and like, let them know that. Because a lot of times people don't. They just keep that stuff to themselves. So, yeah, like, express appreciation for those around you when you can.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like there's a quote, and I'm forgetting who it is by, but like if you see something beautiful in someone, like let them know. Because if you're not letting them know, it's kind of like on you.
Yeah.
Like there's no reason to hold that in.
Yeah. And last one for me. How would you describe your dive style?
Unique. I don't really think it's like, especially my style, I think it's less I don't want to say, I don't know the word that I'm looking for, but very me. I would say it fits. Because it's not necessarily the prettiest stuff, but at the end of the day, it's kind of what I need when I need it.
Mm-hmm. Perfect. Yeah, that's fantastic.
Love it. Is that everything here?
Yeah, that's all I got from me.
You got anything to add, Quinn, before we start wrapping things up here?
Thank you, guys. I think you guys do a wonderful job here with this podcast.
You help us out big time.
Yeah, but it's really to see where it's come from and where it's at now, and I think where we all know it can go. It's really cool to watch it happen. So.
Yeah. Yeah, it's been a fun ride, and we're excited for more episodes to come. And thank you for doing episode 13. You're an awesome representative of this university, and it was so cool doing research and learning more about you and how much of a stud diver you are, where you come from, all the things you do for this university, both in the pool or on the diving board and outside the diving board, outside the pool. And really appreciate you coming on. Keep doing your thing, man. I'm rooting for you. So thanks, Quinn.
Thank you.
We appreciate you coming on. We're excited to do more episode 13 now in the books. Some big things I want to touch on before we get going. So we're obviously a sneaky episode next week. It's going to change it up. So beware of that coming out next Monday. We'll have Quinn on, obviously, this upcoming Monday. Obviously, go follow us on Instagram and on YouTube. And we're trying to build up that followership so that you can get to know what our content sounds like and looks like from a day-to-day basis. So please go follow us there. One other thing, working on a promotion, a little bit of a giveaway that might be coming out.
Sure.
I can't tease too much more, but there's something in the works, which I think a lot of pirate fans will love. But once I know more information, I'll let everyone else know more information. So keep your ears open.
What is it?
I said I can't say.
Quinn, I don't even know about this. This has all been discussed.
No one knows. I haven't even told you two yet. So... keep it locked.
That's exciting.
Make sure you guys listen to the episodes, go follow us, and we will talk to you next time.